Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Chicago Tribune editorial board member Kristen McQuarrie. Kristen, good to have you back.
Thanks for showing up.
Yeah. Thank you.
Make me a little nervous there.
No, the highway workers help so much. You know, the Kennedy down to one lane always helps to expedite things.
Ouch!
They added, too, it was nice, in addition to narrowing the Kennedy down to one lane. That's a main thoroughfare, if you're familiar with it.
I'm familiar, yes. Yeah. I took it as well, but I didn't hit that stretch of road construction,
well,
apparently, because I was on time.
Well, you're also coming from, you know, the godforsaken south side of the city.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a big difference. The other thing, which was nice, they added a big cloud of particulate matter that you could drive through after the lanes widened back out to the full complement.
Lungs are okay.
Yeah, I think at the rate of speed I was driving, I think I may have sheared off some of my paint job.
Okay.
But other than that... Okay, all right. So let's get into the big show. A question for you. Which do you think is oilier, Crisco or Lanny Davis?
Oh, man.
Lanny Davis yesterday making the rounds on the morning talk shows and then the afternoon talk shows. Lanny Davis flacking for his client, Michael Cohen. And as many have remarked, the only lawyer in the universe, perhaps worse than Michael Cohen, is Lanny Davis. But the best, by far, was his appearance on Megyn Kelly. And it was a great get by Megyn Kelly because it's difficult. He did it a remote. And it's difficult to set up a remote, a reliable remote, in the sewer in which Lanny Davis resides. So,
right. A lot of technical difficulties.
There's no question. So hat tip to Megyn Kelly. Now, he started off by saying, look, the last thing that Michael Cohen would ever accept, it is beneath him. Don't even mention the P word, you know, pardon.
Not only is he not hoping for, he would not accept a pardon. He considers a pardon from somebody who has acted so corruptly as president to be something he would never accept.
Too much integrity.
I mean, I can't even believe people take him seriously. This is he's talking about Cohen, who's been Trump's lawyer since what, like the early 2000s, and been involved in all kinds of sleazeball activities with this guy. So you didn't even get to the best part, though. So
no, the best part is when he makes a plea on Megyn Kelly's show for his client. You know, he's trying to rebuild his life. Show some heart, America.
Could I just take one opportunity to remind everyone that Michael Cohen has suffered a tragic and difficult experience with his family. He's without resources, and we've set up a website called MichaelCohenTruth.com that we're hoping that he will get some help from the American people so he can continue to tell the truth.
The audience is they don't know if you're ready to donate, Lanny, but we did check before we went to air. It's got $70,000 in it so far. And listen, we appreciate you coming on.
I would say the reaction of your audience may be that they're not as interested in getting the truth out about Donald Trump as many other people in the country. Approximately 60% of the country would not have the reaction of your audience.
Okay. By the way, I overstated it. It's 20,000. It's not 70,000. But, you know, for Cohen's, hope springs eternal, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, man.
19 of that's from Lanny.
I mean, I almost thought it was fake news when I saw this clip. I'm like, there's no way that they're starting a GoFundMe page out of sympathy for Michael Cohen, who is without resource and now needs the help of the American people.
He has suffered a tragedy, Kristen. He.
Oh, man.
Bank fraud befell him.
I have tears coming out of my eyes. This is just complete hilarity.
Yeah, that's Lanny Davis. That's, you know, the nice thing is, much like the Clintons, Lanny Davis doesn't go away. Everything around the Clintons doesn't seem to go away. We can't extricate it from our politics. You got Clinton Foundation Donor Zero, has got his show. I mean, Paul Begala's sort of gone away, which is nice.
Yeah.
He's sort of disappeared, which is nice. But, you know, they're always around wherever there is a human tragedy, like somebody committing bank fraud. Lanny Davis and the Clintons will be there.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Kristen McQueary in for Amy J. And Kristen, you are a parent of actual children. I, a parent of fictional children.
That is correct.
I'm not going to say who's got the more difficult job. But I don't have exposure to incidents like what happened in Wilmette. The Chicago Tribune reporting. It still publishes? No, nothing. 8-year-old.
I was going to do something vulgar, but it wouldn't. The listening audience wouldn't be able to see it, so they wouldn't appreciate it.
Wilmette mom being investigated for letting her 8-year-old walk the dog around the block. Mm-hmm. Is that against the law in Wilmette or in the Chicago area?
Apparently it made somebody nervous.
How old do you have to be allowed to walk your dog?
I think 23.
That's fair.
I think that's what it is.
If you're on your parents' insurance, you cannot walk the dog by yourself. Just after returning home from a walk around the block with her dog, Marshmallow.
It's Marshmallow.
Marshmallow.
That's how Marshmallow is spelled.
I know.
Okay. We'll pronounce it. I like a normal person.
I like pronouncing it that way. Like that singer, Marshmallow.
I'm familiar, yes.
Yeah.
Because my actual children and your fantasy children are familiar with that artist.
Right. I have the same musical taste as your children, is what you're saying.
That's correct.
So Marshmallow. It's fun. It's more fun to say that way.
No.
I never get to say that word. When does that word come up? When you're talking about s'mores?
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
So she's walking her dog, and she was greeted by police officers who came to the family's door. An anonymous caller, of course. That's the North Shore. God forbid anybody put their name on anything.
Yeah.
The courage of the Champagne Socialists in Wilmette. Anonymous caller contacts police after seeing the girl walking the dog alone, said her mother, Corey Wyden. Police never pursued charges. Great restraint. It did launch, however, a DCFS investigation to see if Wyden was neglecting her children.
Yes. I think this is probably automatic that police officers have to be, they have to be reporters. What's the word? Mandated reporters. So
yeah.
They had to contact DCFS because they got this call. So then this mother has to go through a DCFS caseworker showing up at her house, interviewing her. I mean, how humiliating. And by the way, do you think DCFS has anything else on its plate to worry about, like actual cases of abused and neglected children being left home alone? I just wrote an editorial about a little foster boy, 3 years old, died in a house fire because there was no adult in the home, or there was one and she left when the fire started. I mean, there are real issues that DCFS is dealing with. It's a And they're going to send caseworkers to this woman's house? That is insane.
Oh, over this issue, too.
Over this issue.
Right. I mean, it's not like this was just, hey, you got to go to the Wyden home. No, it's here's what happened. That's why you have to go to the Wyden home and launch this investigation. The Wyden, who's 48 years old, she agreed to let her 8-year-old daughter and 17-year-old son get the Maltese puppy last year as long as everyone took turns walking her. You know, something like a normal family does, right?
Yes.
To teach the kids responsibility if you want a pet.
She wasn't walking the dog along the tri-state. She was walking the dog around the block.
She also said she can see out her windows the girls walk around the block.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, I'm a joke with my friends because my kids are around me all the time. Well, I'm sorry, Miss Wyden, that's not good enough.
She's a homeschooler. So, I mean, she really is. This is the child who is in her care and under her supervision all day.
Could you pick a worse target for all of this nonsense. I'll tell you, what do you think? Should Corey Wyden's children be taken from her? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Now, I don't want to preordain the outcome of this investigation. You know, I want to let the facts lead wherever they lead. And DCFS, these are professionals, draw their own conclusions about the safety of the environment for kids at the Wyden home in Wilmette.
Did you see some of the other examples, though? And I remember this being a big story where a woman who lived in Ukrainian Village sent her 5, 11, and 9-year-old and a 9-year-old cousin to a park nearby, and someone at the park called the police because they were unsupervised, 5, 11, and 9. And she could see them. She was in an apartment where she was checking on them, doing some housekeeping, checking on them. And, I mean, that became a serious DCFS inquiry. There was another case of a Tinley Park mother who left her sleeping toddler in a parked car outside a store just to walk up to the kettle to drop money in the Salvation Army kettle with another child, you know, demonstrate some good charity driven around the Christmas season. Somebody called the cops on her. She was standing at the kettle.
Hey, busybodies, and you know, if you see something, use common sense before you say something.
There we go.
Is that? I think we need to infuse that use common sense phrase in between see something and say something. That mantra.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan. And in framing this morning is Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune editorial board. And, I mean, we have to get back to Lanny Davis because he's just too entertaining. I can't stop enjoying Lanny Davis. I hope he never goes away. But first, we were talking about this woman who had a DCFS investigation opened on her for allowing her daughter to walk the dog around the block in Wilmette. Not kidding. Cindy and Joliet, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Hi, Krista. I just really think this obviously is a petty situation, but I think the mom that called in, or let's just say the individual that called in to DCFS, there's probably some little feud going on in the neighborhood, like maybe somebody got a new Lamborghini. And, you know, maybe somebody got a new coat for the fall fashion.
Yeah, yeah,
you know? Or the kids are feuding. Maybe one of the kids, you know, got their braces off early. I don't know.
Exactly.
Dueling lemonade
Something
stands.
So ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, very well done, Cindy. Thank you for the call. You've really got your finger on the pulse of Wilmette. There's no question.
I don't know
about
Lamborghini,
that.
Though. I'd probably go with like a, you know,
like a five series. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's understandable. It's tough to keep up with the Joneses out there. You got to do what you got to do.
You got
to
get
your kid
ahead. You got to call the cops. Yeah. You got to take her down.
Your kid's going to beat my kid in anything? Your kid's going to be taken by the state.
Yeah.
That's my trump card. Okay.
All right.
They play rough up there on the North Shore. All right. So back to Lanny Davis. Lanny Davis, when he wasn't pleading for money for Michael Cohen after this tragedy that has befallen him.
By the way, I have to interject. Michael Cohen's net worth in June, according to like celebritynet.com, $100 million. That's his net worth. But he's destitute, and he's starting a GoFundMe page. So you go ahead. I'm going to enter my credit card and give him a little money to help him with his legal fees.
Although, just to play devil's advocate, if he would lie about $14 million in debt on to a bank, he'd probably lie to celebrity.net about his net worth.
Okay. Well, they based it on his taxi medallion business and what he was accruing from that. But I think that's kind of gone downhill.
Yeah.
So, all right. So it's less than $100 million.
Yeah. Yeah. I think probably by the end of this, he will have next to nothing. It seems to me his whole life is a fraud. And so probably he's living beyond his means. And usually that comes crashing down around
until he writes his book and he does like the Comey book tour, you know, and he gets all the anti-Trumpers to come to his side.
Well, that's true, right? Until he becomes, you know, he thinks he's John Dean, I think.
Yes.
But I don't think it's going to work out quite the same way. We'll see. Lanny Davis, by the way, not sure. I don't know. Maybe you know your in the news business. Has he stopped cyber-stalking Morgan Fairchild yet? I haven't kept track.
I just, are we sure that's him?
Do you remember that story?
No, I don't actually.
Where he thought he was direct messaging Morgan Fairchild on Twitter, but
what?
He wasn't. He was just tweeting for public view. And he was like flirting.
No.
He was trying to flirt with Morgan Fairchild.
What was he saying? I'm looking this up now.
He was saying, I could get you a GoFundMe page. I'll go on the... No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I don't remember what he was saying. It's
but he
Lanny
was openly
Davis.
Tweeting, thinking that he was privately messaging.
Yeah.
Oh, that is... I love that.
Yeah.
He seems like he just would smell of formaldehyde. So I'm just not sure if he's... Is he real? Is he a real person? Or is this like a Weekend at Bernie's type situation where he's stuffed with different things? And
well, I've only spoken to him on the radio, you know, so remotely. We've talked to him a million times.
You have?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
He's like so impossible to interview. It very much like Megyn Kelly had to endure. You know, he'll slither onto the phone and he does this. He does a filibuster. And then if you interrupt him, please, I let you finish. I let you ask your question. Now, please let me answer. Please. Can we set the ground? And then he'll just obsess about it. Can we set the ground rules? We're going to let each other finish. And then if I make some smart aleck remark about, look, I didn't personally attack you. Let's avoid the name calling. Let's have a civil. It's just when you want to reach through the microphone and strangle him, which I'm sure Megyn Kelly wanted to do yesterday, although it was just too much fun he was providing for her audience for her to want to do that.
The ending, I can see how he worked. I mean, he worked into that interview a way to try to raise money for his client and essentially raise money for himself to get his legal bills paid. I mean, that was just, I
understand.
That is applause worthy.
You don't have to beg. I'll play the clip again.
Could I just take one opportunity to remind everyone that Michael Cohen has suffered a tragic and difficult experience with his family. He's without resources, yeah. And we've set up a website called MichaelCohenTruth.com that we're hoping that he will get some help from the American people so he can continue to tell the truth.
I mean, I tell you, you know, it's better than a Seinfeld laugh track.
It kind of restores my faith in humanity, actually, that they laughed
they
and
get the joke.
Thought that it was an totally ridiculous.
No, when Lanny Davis wasn't supplicating himself for cash for, as you point out, himself, he was suggesting other things, like if he wasn't the president of the United States, Donald Trump would be indicted and jailed.
We didn't adjudicate anything.
Well, that's not it, but that's what he said. He also made the suggestion that there is more that Michael Cohen has to say that Special Counsel Mueller would be interested to hear.
There are certain things you do that influence an election that are legal. Certain things.
No, that's not it either. Okay, well effort.
you just play Lanny Davis.
Of course.
The buttons are hard this morning.
We'll have to work on that. The interesting piece in The Hill by Mark Penn, he talks about this plea deal as the prosecutor's attempt to set up Trump. Why was Michael Cohen investigated in the first place? Because the Steele dossier had him making secret trips to meet with Russians that never happened. So his business dealings got a thorough scrubbing. And in the process, he fell into the Paul Manafort bin reserved for the special counsel for squeezing the juice until it comes out. We're back in 1998 all over again with presidents and candidates covering up their alleged marital misdeeds and prosecutors trying to turn legal acts into illegal ones by inventing new crimes. This is the position that Dershowitz has taken as well. Alan Dershowitz was on MSNBC also trying to get a word in edgewise yesterday. Making the case that if the president knowingly paid hush money through his attorney, not a crime.
Here's the issue. The president is entitled to pay hush money to anyone he wants during a campaign. There are no restrictions on what a candidate can contribute to his own campaign. So if, in fact, the president directed Cohen to do it as his lawyer and was going to compensate him for it, the president committed no crime. If Cohen
that
did it on his own, then Cohen
though,
committed the crime.
All right, so since she so rudely interrupted the fungible MSNBC host, Dershowitz had to try and explain his position to her one more time.
The president doesn't break the law if, as a candidate, he contributes to his own campaign. So if he gave $1 million to two women as hush money, there would be no crime. If he directed his lawyer to do it and he would compensate the lawyer, he's committed no crime. The only crime is if a third party, namely Cohen, on his own contributed to a campaign, that would be a campaign contribution. So it's a catch-22 for the prosecution. If they claim that the president authorized him to do it or directed him to do it, it's not a crime for anybody. If Cohen did it on his own, then it's a crime for Cohen, but not the president.
You know, I feel like we're not exploring enough the issue of whether or not this even qualifies as a campaign-related expense. I'm still struggling with that. I do not see this private money exchange between, I mean, yes, it in some ancillary way, it benefited his campaign. But that would raise the standard as to what is a campaign donation or what is a campaign fund expenditure that I have ever been aware of. I mean, so do you really believe that this qualifies as a campaign expenditure that should have been reported as what, an in-kind?
I think there's a credible, I think there are credible arguments to make both ways, because I'm not an FEC law expert, but I have some familiarity with it. And it's a little hazy. You know, the idea a campaign related is not laid out in some exhaustive list. There are things that are obvious, right? Paid campaign communications,
sure.
A TV
rent.
Ad or a mail
yes.
piece, mm-hmm. Rent for an office, staff, right? But there are some things that are less obvious. And of course, then you can't use, there's also things, as Duncan Hunter is finding out, you can't use campaign funds for, right? Jesse Jackson, Sandy Jackson found out you can't use. So this is sort of a gray area. Is it campaign related? Was it intended to influence the outcome of the campaign? That's why Michael Cohen said it was, and that was the whole purpose for the scheme that was concocted. And the argument, although it's not an argument that Trump has made because he hasn't sort of
admitted
to the underlying mm-hmm. facts or the underlying alleged facts. So I think there's a credible case that you can make. Now, remember, John Edwards is probably the closest case to this mm-hmm. with respect to campaign finance. He was indicted.
He was, but he was not convicted.
Right. Acquitted on one count, jury deadlocked on the other charges.
But that was even so he used he said, you know, yes, I was paying this my mistress. I was trying to cover this up to protect my family. It had less to do with, you know, politics than it did protecting my family. I think Trump could make the same argument. And in fact, mm-hmm. I think the timing of it, yes, of course, they made these payments in October, right before the election. But they had also tried to shut her up a long time ago. And I'm sure there's probably a trail of him doing that in the past, which you won't want to talk about, but which will make his case that this was not a campaign-related expense. Let me give you one example. So Bruce Rauner recently gave $100,000 of his own money
to Willie Wilson's
foundation.
Yeah.
Does that, in effect, help his campaign? Of course it does. He did it now. He did it during campaign season. He's trying to win some sympathy with those voters. So should that have been recorded as like some sort of in-kind benefit to his campaign? I mean, that seems to be the standard.
Well,
that
it's
we're
also a 501. You went gave it to a 501c3,
right? But it's his own private money,
yes.
Giving to a private donation. In this case, it was private money going to a private person, and we're kind of overlaying this with campaign finance law. An FEC regulation says that you can only be considered a campaign related expense if it would not have been otherwise made, but for the campaign.
Right, and this is sort of a he said. Are a matter to be adjudicated unless, and this was asked of Lanny Davis, and he presented no additional evidence other than what Michael Cohen said in his allocution, which is to say, do you have evidence where President Trump said, I'm instructing you to do this because we need to keep this quiet until after the election, you know, give some kind of indication that this was driven by the exigencies of the election and the campaign.
I know.
And Lanny Davis did not have anything more to add to that. So to your point.
I still think even under those circumstances, it's really a stretch to make that a reportable contribution. That's what we're talking about, paperwork, making sure that shows up somewhere on his FEC D2s, if they're, are they D2s at the federal level? But I
just, FEC filings. Yeah. But the campaign disclosure reports. So I think there's a credible argument. I mean, this is, was the discussion we got into yesterday, and Mark Levin has been on this, as well as Dershowitz, saying there's no crime here. A crime is not a crime. Truth is not the truth. A crime is not a crime. Even though Cohen pled guilty to it. So here's the thing. Federal prosecutors think that there is a crime. Michael Cohen, whatever the motivation was, and there's questions about his motivation, I understand, he pled guilty to these campaign finance-related crimes. And so it does set up two schools of thought, and I think there's a credible case that can be made in the alternative to say it was a campaign-related expense. It was for the purpose of keeping Stormy Daniels quiet and keeping her to abide the kind of the original back and forth of their non-disclosure agreement. And so at minimum, he can pay the money, but he has to report it. And so at minimum, it was a willful failure to disclose. That's an argument I think that you can attempt to make out, and prosecutors may. Although, the idea of taking down the President of the United States over this and something this complicated and this ancillary, I think politically is very dangerous for Democrats, which is why you had Nancy Pelosi say yesterday, impeachment's not on the table.
Well, right. I think for all of them. I mean, do you know a single member of Congress who hasn't gotten slapped on the wrist or filed something incorrectly or had the FEC look at their paperwork or had an opponent file a complaint with the FEC over their paperwork? I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of members of Congress getting extremely nervous if this is the new standard.
Well, right. And the John Edwards case, I think he got a $2.3 million fine by the FEC for his campaign finance failures. Barack Obama mentioned yesterday, 1,300 donors not disclosed, $1.8 million. They fined him $375,000, his presidential campaign, the FEC. Mm-hmm. So usually the failure to disclose, to run afoul of the reporting requirements results in a fine.
Well, unless you're Jesse Jackson Jr. and you're literally taking the money out of your fund, spending it on furs.
Right, that's a different thing.
Right.
Because it's not only a campaign finance issue, it's an income tax issue.
Right.
Right. Greg in Schaumburg.
Morning, Christian and Dan. I'm going to ask you this question, but this first question is going to be, when are we going to show up? There are so many transactions that the Democrats have done, including placing plants within the campaign, and we're just not on the board. When Pelosi makes the statement that impeachment is not on a table, give me a break. As soon as they get one more in person that they can pull off anything, they're going to do it. And I just wonder when we're going to show up.
All right, thanks for the call, Greg. Tony on the South Side.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Kristen. Listen, doesn't Lanny Davis, hauntingly sounds like one of the Jerky Boys when he's talking about getting a GoFundMe page. I was waiting for him to say something like, we're going to sue Donald Trump for punitive damages that he's causing my client now.
Yes.
It's crazy. I love it.
Oh, boy. I really did it this time. Okay, then. I'll come in with my nub.
Well, I'm asking you for help, and maybe I could sue for punitive damages that you're giving me.
I'm giving you?
Yes.
Me?
Yes.
What'd I do to you?
Well, punitive damages here.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and it for Amy J. this morning, Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune editorial board member, and this story that has been subordinated to the Michael Cohen plea deal and the Manafort convictions. Molly Tibbetts, the young woman who was murdered in Iowa by a person in this country illegally. The government's not sure how long. The sheriff's office said, 4 to 7 years?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Molly Tibbetts' family released a statement yesterday. Our hearts are broken on behalf of Molly's entire family. We thank all of those from around the world who sent their thoughts and prayers for our girl. We know that many of you will join us as we continue to carry Molly in our hearts forever. The family also asked for time to process their loss, so they remain forever grateful for the outpouring of support they've received since Molly went missing. Her brother, Scott, also tweeted out her favorite quote. He said, "Happiness can be found even in the darkest of times. If one only remembers to turn on the light, be somebody's light today." 24-year-old Christian Bahena Rivera, illegal immigrant, was arrested on first-degree murder yesterday, on Tuesday, I should say. And President Trump is sort of refocusing some attention on border security and immigration policy. He cut a little 15-second vignette that I assume the White House would like to see moved around the country, particularly in swing seats by Republican congressional candidates.
Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats want to abolish the brave men and women of ICE. What I want to do is abolish the killers in ISIS. And you know who's going to win? We are.
Okay. Mark Stein had a good piece at his site about the priorities of U.S. justice. Per MSNBC, Molly Tibbetts is, quote, "some girl in Iowa Fox News is talking about," unquote. That is what MSNBC said about Fox after the Cohen plea was announced. Stein writes, "because as the pajama boys at Mediaite will tell you, only racist fearmongers are boorish enough to make a fuss about homicidal illegal aliens. It's no surprise that a bureaucracy that can't deport a Nazi in 14 years cannot reliably inform its citizens just how long Molly Tibbetts' killer has been in the country. That's why Trump got elected. Not just the murderers, but the media diversity commissars telling you you're not allowed to notice the murderers." He makes the point that Nazi that was deported, 94 years old, was living here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The deportation order on him was issued in 2004.
Yeah. There was a. I'm just trying to verify whether it was actually true, but I think the hard copy of the New York Times yesterday had no coverage of Molly Tibbetts. Zero.
Elizabeth Warren covered it. She went on CNN. She was asked about it. Here's what your 2020 Democrat nominee for president of the United States had to say.
I'm so sorry for the family here, and I know this is hard, not only for the family, but for the people in her community, the people throughout Iowa. But one of the things we have to remember is we need an immigration system that is effective, that focuses on where real problems are. Last month, I went down to the border, and I saw where children had been taken away from their mothers. I met with those mothers who had been lied to, who didn't know where their children were, who hadn't had a chance to talk to their children. And there was no plan for how they would be reunified with their children. I think we need immigration laws that focus on people who pose a real threat. And I don't think mamas and babies are the place that we should be spending our resources.
So is Elizabeth Warren right? The real tragedy in the Molly Tibbetts case is the family separation policy at the border. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. We've got to focus where our immigration system has a problem. It's not with violent criminals who are here illegally who murder murders a 20-year-old girl out for a jog. That's not where we have a problem. We have a problem with the family separation policy that's been enforced for the last three administrations.
Mamas and babies.
She's an Oklahoma girl, Kristen.
Right. I know. I forget. So I'm glad she reminds me every once in a while with that slang.
Straight out of a John Steinbeck novel.
It's so authentic. I mean, I just really felt it in my heart. I mean, can you just for a moment when you're asked this question, you know this question is coming. Can you just take a moment and talk about this tragedy? Do you have to pivot and make it about Trump and make it about the separation policy? Can you just offer some actual authentic sympathy for this family?
That would require being an actual human being.
I know. She's not.
These are Westworld characters.
I get it.
Minus the AI intelligence and skill sets.
It's just the constant, you know, nothing can be just sacred for a moment. Everything has to be politicized. I know the other side does it too. But I did find this tweet. So this is from Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, tweeted out last night. There was simply no room in the New York Times today for a story on Molly Tibbetts. And then he tweets out the print edition of the Thursday paper. Not a single story. I mean, it's just very disturbing. This is someone who had been missing for, what, 3 or 4 weeks. Everyone was following the case. It's just that the extra sting that this happened to a girl who was jogging in her hometown by someone who was not supposed to be in the country in the first place deserves us to pause and reflect. But we're not going to get that from the left, I guess.
Here's another case that you won't hear about in the New York Times and the Chicago Press Corps as well, generally speaking. We reported it, one of the papers that I started, Will County Gazette, you know, one of my fake newspapers, according to the real press in Chicago that gives you the straight dope, doesn't pull any punches. Not this Chicago Press Corps.
Is there any member of the Chicago Press Corps or statewide, any outlet that has not trashed you or your fake newspapers? I'm just trying to think.
No.
Zero. Okay.
Yeah. Miguel Luna. You heard about this story? Maybe from Will County. Illegal Mexican immigrant, convicted rapist Miguel Luna was arrested 36 times for minor traffic offenses between 2001 and 2016, according to Will County Sheriff's and Circuit Court records. One arrest in Rockdale, May 21, 2016, for a suspended license occurred the same day he raped a woman along the I&M Canal Trail, one of three rapes he confessed to committing in 2015 and 2016. Will County Judge David Carlson sentenced Luna on Monday to 80 years in prison. Now, county officials are asking why Luna was here in the first place, since ICE issued a deportation order for Luna back in March of 2012. Well, I mean, you know, it took 14 years for the Nazi in New York. We're only 6 years in.
Yeah, they've got the clock running. Plenty of time.
Oh, yeah, and in the meantime, he raped three women. Is this part of our immigration system problem or no? Or the real problem with our immigration system is the effort, sometimes ham-handed, sometimes unfortunate, but you have to deal with the reality on the ground of border security trying to identify and vet people who are attempting to illegally come into this country and not going through a proper port of entry if they're seeking political asylum. Is that the real problem, or are people who are otherwise people are law abiding, or even, as I've said many times, illegal immigrants here who are otherwise law abiding, being preyed upon by violent criminals in this country illegally who we refuse to deport even when we start to process them for deportation? And the political ruling class at the federal level, at the state level, has all kinds of excuses.
Right. And you've said, and this is not about painting with a broad brush all of the people who are here illegally, who are law-abiding except for their presence here illegally. But otherwise, hardworking people, this is not representative of the population at large. But it is still just, you know, kind of disgustingly symptomatic of our unwillingness to look at this problem and, as you said, vet people and get rid of people who have committed violent crimes.
Dana Lash had a good tweet about this Molly Tibbetts thing and Pocahontas's response. A family separation policy, Senator Warren? Molly Tibbetts is permanently separated from her family. I mean, there is a certain level of hatred you have to understand the political class has for you when they can say in the face of the murder of your daughter, discovered 48 hours prior, that's too bad, but here's what I'm really concerned about. The left is very cavalier with the lives of others. You understand? Chris in Woodstock, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. One thing I can't understand and really irks me is the fact that these liberals go off and say, well, Americans kill people every day, too, or white people kill people every day, too. Well, that makes absolutely no sense. That's like saying, then why don't we let everyone out of prison? Because robberies, rapes, and murders happen every day anyhow, and some of those people that you're going to let out are going to turn over a new leaf and be good. Yeah. So why don't we just let everybody out?
Yeah.
I mean, their argument absolutely makes no sense to me.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Well, they're not making an argument. They're bigot baiting. Bigot baiting and solidarity and marginality, a great Rusty Reno piece from the campaign, actually, that sticks with me because he properly sussed it out. Those are the two prongs of the left's communication strategy and, frankly, policymaking. Bigot baiting, solidarity and marginality. So their whole point here is to cobble together a political coalition based on creating perceived marginality, creating perceived bigotry to generate solidarity for the purposes of elections and consolidating command over your lives. I mean, that's the point. So, of course, we could give the qualifier every time we talk about this issue, which is a fact. It's a very small percentage of people here illegally who commit violent crimes. Small percentage of a big number is a big problem. And it would not matter to them. It wouldn't get you any further down the road in an intelligent discussion because all they can do, all they have to offer is bigot baiting and the effort to create a marginality for the purposes of political solidarity.
I think, too, that there is consistency in that. I'm just as outraged over the death of Molly Tibbetts as I am about innocent life lost in the city of Chicago. Like I wrote last week about DeMarco Kennedy, who in 2016 was sitting at his table paying bills while his wife and children were in the living room waiting for a movie night. A stray bullet came through the window behind him. He was shot and killed and died right there on his living room floor holding his wife's hand. Or the woman last weekend who was 80 years old, shot in her bed while she was asleep. 5 hours before that, a woman sitting on her couch watching TV in West Englewood, bullet flies through her front door, tears through her abdomen, kills her. So it's the loss of innocent life, the cavalier attitude toward life. I know that Molly Tibbetts, and because it was an illegal immigrant who is accused in her murder, has an extra sting, but that doesn't mean that there is a lack of outrage for all innocent life like hers that is lost.
Right. When we talk about Chicago violence, do we not talk about the murder clearance rate? Do we not talk about holding people responsible for acts of violence? Do we not talk about what the Cook County State's Attorney's Office is doing to prosecute and what judges are doing to properly sentence violent criminals? This is about violent criminals. I don't care what your race is. I don't care where your country of origin is. This is about eliminating, to the best we can, identified predators from the civilian population.
Yes.
Period.
Period.
Tom in Deer Park.
Good morning. When I heard Senator Warren's comments and how she pivoted off the murder to talk about mothers and babies. I know it's not an original thought, but I just couldn't help but think, here's one of the leaders of the Democrat Party, very possibly the Democrat nominee in 2020, talking about mothers and babies with a party platform that at one time was abortion safe, legal, and rare. To now abortion, let's celebrate it.
Yes.
Let's wear T-shirts about it, and let's all have one. How did this happen so fast, and who is she the spokesperson for? Mothers and babies? You've got to be kidding me.
Tom, it's mamas and babies. I just want to be clear.
Thanks for the call, Tom. I'm going to have to report you to Oprah. I'm sorry.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Krista McQuarrie in for Amy J. this morning. We're talking about the Tibbetts case and the justice system, a really good Mark Stein piece I encourage people to check out, talking about how we put the full weight of the American justice system, bring it to bear against the George Papadopouloses, while Imran Awan gets one. Obviously, this in the context of Molly Tibbetts' murder and this nagging problem of allowing people in this country who are violent criminals to stay, allowing people here here illegally. He writes to Mark Stein, "This is what federal money, no object justice brings you. A Nazi gets to have gets half a decade shy of his 100th birthday in order to live long enough to have his deportation order enforced. Young itinerant Mexican murderers can break into a nation on orange alert. And all the seeing security state can tell you when they did so is to within 3 years. But George Papadopoulos, we can get him for not being cooperative enough with the Mueller investigation." This in the context of all the resources devoted to many of these individuals that are associated with Trump and have committed financial crimes unrelated, but are trying, but the state is using to try and convert into to convert political crimes into real crimes against the president. Mike in Crown Point.
Morning. I said a point about I don't lay this at the feet of Democrats, this problem with immigration. I laid it at the feet of the Republicans, who had, when President Trump came to office, they had the House, they had the Senate, they had the presidency. Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan couldn't get a majority vote on this. Republicans are the ones that defected on it. Every Republican that didn't support this, they should lay it at their feet.
Mike, I'd like to disagree with you, but I can't, so I won't.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. Forget about Trump, Russia, or Mueller. How about just Paul Manafort? The justice system worked. Why can't we all applaud that? We'll talk about that when freedom turns at 5.
Good morning, Dan. And in for Amy this morning, Kristen McCreary, the Chicago Tribune editorial board. And since campaign finance is the national discussion topic du jour, how about a little look at the local culture? Analysis, of course, done by one of the papers I started or outlets I started online, ChicagoCityWire.com, because who else is going to do it, make this connection in Chicago? Can't expect the Combine to report on the Combine, you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
You're just fake news, but go ahead.
Okay. Fake news called from, you know, State Board of Elections filings. I just made it up. Okay. As we term it, meet Illinois' It Could Be Worse bipartisan campaign donor class. These are the Venn diagram of Rahm Rahner donors, and not just because they belong to the same wine club. Rahm and Rahner donors. Turns out that donors to Tiny Dancer and former Governor Bruce Rahner, 323 of them. 323.
That's quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a bit of overlap there between very distinct ideologies, right?
And it's is it? What?
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get
the
to
distinct
that.
Ideologies.
Sorry.
You threw me.
No.
And it's of course all the big boys and girls: Jerry Reinsdorf, Morningstar founder Joseph Mansueto, Apple Vacation CEO. Apple Vacation CEO has given Tiny Dancer $215,000. And you expect me to go on an Apple Vacation here? All right. Groupon founder Eric Lefkowski, the Crown family, Ken Griffin, others. Now, again, in the interest of full disclosure, the PAC that I run out in my life as a private citizen outside of radio has received donations from some of these individuals, and I make no bones about it, and I make no apologies for it. That's not the issue. The issue is what it says about our culture and what it says about a donor class that sort of has low expectations for the city and state. This is how you get down to Tiny Dancer and your other choices for mayor. This is how you get down to former Governor Rahner and Spalding. There's a lot of talented people in the city and state. And for some reason, they have no interest in holding themselves out for office. So we get a lot of sometimes rich people, not necessarily super talented, rich and talent, rich and intelligence, not synonyms. I don't know how to break it to some people. The rich guy bias needs to be unlearned. Rich and good, rich and independent. Not synonyms. None of those things are synonyms with rich. None of those words. But it's just interesting to see this Byron Trott, who was a big bundler for Barack Obama. Former Treasury Secretary George W. Bush, Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, who lives out Barrington Way. You know, all of the names that you would know, or at least you would know when they are associated with their businesses or where they have found great success. 27 partners at Kirkland & Ellis report a collective $946,000 in donations to Emanuel & Rauner, including its firm chairman, Jeffrey Hams of Glencoe. So I don't know. Is this something that's noteworthy, Kristen? Or,
I mean, yes, but I think it's just a reminder that big pocketed donors are not donating based on policy, because I actually do think these two individuals have different policy objectives. Rahm versus Rauner.
Sanctuary city, sanctuary state, tax increases, nothing on property taxes, abortion on demand financed taxpayers.
Rauner vetoed a tax increase. He did come in with pro-growth agenda reforms that he hoped to get passed.
You know what happened on that tax increase.
The point is that money buys them access. And just yesterday, we got a news release from the governor's office talking about how the state sold $965 million in GO bonds.
Yeah.
Who do you suppose got a majority of that business? Some people on this list, you think? So it's just, to me, another indication that people are giving money to get access to win state and city business, not because they have a particular fondness for either of these individuals.
Well, I mean, so that's sort of the point, though, isn't it? That's sort of the problem, I would suggest. And I suggest it even to some who have donated to my PAC, because I'll suggest it right now, as I have privately. Kind of the low expectations you have, such that you're willing to finance the opposition. I mean, by the way, Bruce Rauner is on this list. He finances the opposition, too.
Yes, he has.
He finances people who then use his money against him. But he's a genius. So that to me says about everything you need to know about the Illinois political culture. I'm willing to finance my opposition so that I can properly virtue signal to the kind of amoral donor class that I'm a part of.
Have you looked at personal PACs donations lately to state legislative candidates?
All Democrats.
All Democrats, all in districts that Rauner is trying to get those Republicans reelected. So you have someone like Peter Breen, who I know he split from Rauner, but I'm sure Rauner would like to keep that a Republican seat. And now you have Terry Cosgrove of Personal PAC, with whom the governor partnered in signing that expansion of abortion bill, now trying to oust Republicans.
Genius. You don't understand the 25-dimensional chess that the establishment of Republicans have been playing for the last 50 years in the supermajority. And with these come again, go again, big government Republicans. See, this is, you have to do that to get the moderate vote, to get the independents. Rauner's minus 25 among moderates and minus 18 among independents to Spalding. See, it's working.
I know. You know, I continue to be just gobsmacked at his signing of that bill. And you know, I've been a defender of the governor's. I think he has he has protected taxpayers more than a Democratic governor would have. He blocked a bill last week. He vetoed a bill that was going to categorize all paramedics and EMTs as firefighters, so then they get pensions. I mean, that would be very, very costly to local governments. He vetoed it. So I appreciate his standing firm on some issues with taxpayers. But mm-hmm. signing of HB 40, it is baffling. It's probably the dumbest policy and political move I've ever seen a politician make.
Mm. Well, that's a big statement in this state. So where are we left? I guess I should go back to say about these people who are insulated from terrible public policy because of their success and the wealth that their success has generated. If you are truly interested in pension reform, if you're truly interested in rethinking and reengineering our property tax system to, say, mirror Indiana's. If you're interested in expanding school choice in the city and elsewhere, mm-hmm. if you're interested in addressing the endemic problems, financial, economic liberty problems in Illinois, then I find it to be a very difficult case to make out how you can support tools of the status quo the Chicago Democrat power structure. These individuals we're talking about who give tens, hundreds, millions of dollars to both sides, there is nothing any politician in Illinois can do to them. And most of them really are not buying access. They're not trying to get a contract. They're not trying to win bond work.
I think they are.
Most of them are not. Some of the big firm, there's some on this list that are. The big firms are, yes. When you're talking about some of the people, though, in the 100 millionaire stratosphere, the billionaire stratosphere, they're not looking for city business.
What are they doing then? You mingle in these crowds. Yeah. I do not.
I would suggest,
what do they want?
I would suggest that they are interested in being sort of a vanguard of the city and state. They are interested in big issues and policy issues like pension reform and property taxes. But I think they're doing it wrong when they hedge their bets with the established order. We don't have enough people with means who are courageous, frankly. I don't know how else to say it, who are willing to say, bring it. Tiny Dancer, Benedict Rauner, any Republican or Democrat, alderman, representative, whoever, bring it. Because I am focusing my resources and my energy on people who are serious about problem solving. And there's a lot of Republicans who need to be taken out in primaries and a lot of Democrats that need to be taken out in generals. We need a whole new crop of personnel that are adults that we don't have presently in Springfield or in the city council. And I'm going to focus my efforts on those people. That's not what is happening here. What's happening here is a hedge because they want to, like, I guess, I don't know, have access so they can do stand-ups about donations for soccer fields or trails in the city. So they're sort of like seen as a civic philanthropist beyond politics, and they need the access to the mayor for that press conference, for example. Or they just don't want to be ostracized from their social circles. They're the fellow board members at the Lyric Opera or the Art Institute or what have you. I think there's this is why I say it's cultural. I think there's a lot of cultural pressure for them to. It's okay for you to be who you are and support what you think, as long as you throw us some of it too. We still got to wet our beak, so you can't be all the way over to one side. Even if you are, you still got to fund some of our stuff too. That's what happens.
Yes, I agree with you. But looking at this list, there are a lot of people on this list who depend on, in some regard, state and city government for their own legacy,
yes,
their businesses, their,
yes,
law firms, their children. Exelon relies heavily on the legislature to pass friendly legislation.
Yes.
Equity investors who are counting on the expansion of O'Hare to be able to line their own pockets. There are a lot of people who that's probably what, why would you write Rauner a check anyway when he can write his own checks? It's to get something in return.
For some, yes, for some. But there are others that I think there's a bigger dynamic at play. And I just think that they, frankly, at this stage with where Illinois is, where Chicago is, it's time to push all your chips to one side of the table or the other, really. That would be my suggestion. I don't think this approach is working. And I tell you what, I think I've got a lot of evidence on my side. I don't care how rich anybody is. The manifest weight of the evidence is decidedly on my side. What's been done by the donor class in the city and state is not working.
But the riverfront looks so pretty, Dan.
I know, and the planters.
The planters are gorgeous. And I really appreciate Ken Griffin, separating the bikers from the walkers down by your neck of the woods.
Project is scheduled for completion in 2057.
I know. It's still not open. The flyways.
By the way, related story. I've done some surveying in the suburbs. Interesting. One thing that comes back is bipartisan, big numbers. People seem to reject the idea, less likely to vote for a candidate if they're financed by Mike Madigan. We'll see if that plays out. So Mike Madigan from July 15th to August 15th has already poured in more than $1 million to support his toadies for state legislative office throughout suburban cook in the collar counties. You can get that at prairiestatewire.com if you want to look at your locale. So I don't know. I mean, maybe we're just trying to help people connect the dots, and maybe some people out there that are more hyper informed than their others in their social circle should do the same. See if you can help people connect to who they say they are and what they say they want to the reality on the ground, because there's a real disconnect in Illinois on that score. Bruce in Bloomingdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, I tune in for this sort of brilliant conversation. I really do.
Thank you.
This is about access, and take my call. And maybe the thing that all these people got to donate money in order to get, you know, quote, government business, maybe that's the source of the problem. Maybe government's doing just a little bit too much to the point that everybody's got to, as you said, wet their beak. At this point, guys, the dots are the size of beach balls that weigh as much as a black hole. If you need any help connecting those dots, I'm pretty sure you need somebody following you around going in, out, in, out.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
Thanks, exactly. Bruce. And, yeah, as the Institute for Justice says about the federal government, there's not too much money in politics. There's too much government for sale. That applies to Illinois.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Chicago Tribune editorial board member Kristen McQueary. And Kristen, Lanny Davis, Michael Cohen's representation of sorts, says Cohen will fix for food. Won't you open your heart?
Please. We got a GoFundMe page because he's destitute now. He needs some help.
Open your heart and in your wallet.
Could I just take one opportunity to remind everyone that Michael Cohen has suffered a tragic and difficult experience with his family. He's without resources, and we've set up a website called MichaelCohenTruth.com that we're hoping that he will get some help from the American people so he can continue to tell the truth.
Yeah. Megyn Kelly's audience didn't seem like they were rushing to their smartphones to make a donation.
No, and actually when you type in that address in your browser, it pops up to a Trump page. So somebody already circumvented that.
Yeah. That's going to make Lanny Davis even more
sad.
They're
going to have to work harder. They should just do the GoFundMe. Just do the traditional route, put up your sob story, and write your book, and then we'll see what happens.
Look, the real issue is, when is Lanny Davis going to admit that he's Saul Rosenberg from the Jerky Boys? You just heard Lanny Davis. Now here's Saul.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I bought glasses there. My name is Saul Rosenberg.
Yes.
And my eyes are going crazy.
Now, Lanny.
Could I just take one opportunity to...
I mean, it's pretty close.
It's darn close.
Saul.
Well, I'm asking you for help, and maybe I could sue for punitive damages that you're giving me.
Lanny.
Could I just take one opportunity to remind everyone that Michael Cohen has suffered a tragic and difficult...
Now, it's also, it's not just that they sound alike. They have the same rap.
They do.
Yeah.
Yes. Woody Allen will play them in the film version.
Oh, boy. President Trump not giving his former fixer, Michael Cohen, a very good Yelp review. If anyone is looking for a good lawyer, I would strongly suggest that you don't retain the services of Michael Cohen. Perhaps Lanny Davis has not yet touched President Trump's heart, but maybe he's touched our colleague Mike Gallagher's heart. Mike Gallagher, host of the Mike Gallagher Show, weekdays 9 to 11 right after this show on these airwaves. Mike, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Are you a donor yet?
Dan, Kristen, I love it. I love the Saul comparison. That's classic. You know, there's some little-known facts about the Lanny Davis chapter and the Michael Cohen GoFundMe page. For example, Cohen recently unloaded a couple of New York City Upper East Side properties to the tune of about $9 million. So this guy is not exactly,
You can't live on $9 million in New York.
No, you're right. It's a very expensive city, and legal bills are expensive. I mean, really, the specter of Lanny Davis going on television and making all the rounds saying, basically, line my pockets, because I'm the lawyer. you got to please donate to the GoFundMe page so that I can get richer. Really, really took this thing to a whole new level. When you got Megyn Kelly's audience turning on you, you probably realize you're barking up the wrong tree. And as Kristen pointed out, he didn't even secure the domain name before he started promoting it on television, and somebody snatched it up, and you go to a Donald Trump rally page. It's kind of hysterical. The whole thing takes on it's like an episode of something on Lifetime or something.
Mike,
I've never seen anything like it.
Mike, it sounds like you're questioning the integrity of Michael Cohen and Lanny Davis, and I got to push back on that because Lanny Davis said yesterday. He said yesterday, Michael Cohen would take no pardon from President Trump, not that he has that choice. He doesn't have a choice, even if Trump wanted a pardon, which he doesn't. But he is not going to take a pardon. He would publicly repudiate a pardon because he has too much integrity to take a pardon from somebody who has devalued the presidency.
Says the lawyer who hasn't tried a case in years. Remember, Lanny Davis, he's a Clinton henchman. The real comedy here is that Michael Cohen very shrewdly reached out to somebody who would like to exact Hillary's revenge, and that's what Lanny Davis represents. He doesn't prosecute right now. He doesn't take trials. He's in this to try to avenge Hillary's loss, and that's what much of this is about. But guys, make no mistake about it. It was a tough week for the president. The president resorting to gallows humor on Twitter, as you said, was pretty funny when he said, if you're looking for the services of a good lawyer, this isn't your guy. But we've been here before. I mean, we've all been here before. The American people made a decision after the Access Hollywood tape. All right, he says crude things. This is an unconventional guy. He's a bull in a china shop. Is America going to be better off under Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton? So we're back to the same place, only now he's actually the president. And now people have to decide, okay, am I better off with the tax cuts? Am I better off with a roaring economy? Am I better off with the focus on border security? Am I better off at, hey, a Nazi, literally a Nazi guard, finally being deported under Donald Trump's watch? I've got the New York Daily News in front of me, an editorial this morning that says, thanks, Mr. President. And you have to know, the New York Daily News, right, not unlike Chicago papers, hates Donald Trump. And yet they're saying, under Donald Trump's tenure, finally this Nazi prison guard, using ICE, was deported. Deported to Germany, where they've been trying to deport him for many, many years. So those are the decisions people are going to have to make on November the 6th. And that's what this is all about. This is a referendum on the midterm election. And Democrats think they're fired up. They'll overplay their hand. They're going to pretend. Dick Durbin very graciously saying, now's not the time to talk impeachment.
Oh, no, right.
Nice try, Dick. They've got impeachment on their minds. They've got an upending of the presidency on their minds. And we'll see if Republicans turn out in force on November the 6th and keep the country in the same direction we've been going in.
So, Mike, Dan and I were talking off air a little bit about just the financial crimes that these two associates of the president have been convicted and pled out to. Is there some concern that the issue now for Donald Trump is not going to be Russia collusion, but something in his tax-paying past? He does not strike me as someone who is crossing T's and dotting I's. And do you see him as being also vulnerable if they are combing through the financial records of his attorney, that Donald Trump himself will be vulnerable to something similar?
Kristen, he's vulnerable to everything. I mean, you're not crossing his T's and dotting his I's may be the understatement of the century. This was a real estate mogul who clearly associated himself with some pretty sleazy people, as real estate moguls in New York City or Chicago are wont to do. I mean, this sort of happens. Sure, he's vulnerable to everything. What we've seen this week, though, has nothing to do with the president's culpability here, because remember, many have said, and I like this phrase, Mueller's prosecution is a prosecution in search of a crime. The special counsel, all of this, these guys were ensnared in the Mueller prosecution looking for Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. And this doesn't come within a million miles of that. And everybody knows it. So, listen, you pay your taxes, you don't lie to the FBI, you do the right thing in life, and if you don't, you're going to pay the piper, especially if you've got a special counsel who's looking at your every move over the last 10, 20, 30 years. But at the end of the day, I think the American people are smart enough to recognize this still doesn't have anything to do with Russian collusion, which is the point of the special counsel to begin with.
I wanted to get your reaction to that girl in Iowa. Some girl in Iowa.
Yeah, some girl in Iowa. Yeah, that girl
MSNB,
in Iowa.
Yeah.
You mean the girl that Fox News is obsessed with? Yeah, yeah, that girl.
Yeah, as MSNBC referred to Molly Tibbetts, some girl in Iowa that Fox was talking about. Elizabeth Warren yesterday saying that she extended her condolences to the family, but the real issue is the family separation policy at the border. That's the real immigration problem we have. It just the reaction to the left's inability to confront the problem of violent people here illegally and that part of our immigration system that is obviously not functioning despite all the rhetoric from both parties over the years. And the president sort of doubling down yesterday, releasing this little 15-minute commercial, if you will, making that contrast. The Democrats want to abolish ICE. I want to abolish ISIS. There's your choice in November.
It's a great talking point. Nobody messages better than Donald Trump. Even for Elizabeth Warren, that was a shocking answer, and it's one that Republicans are going to use all the way through the midterm election. Democrats often on this issue of illegal immigration and even on the greatness of America can't get out of the way of themselves. Last week it was Cuomo, Governor Cuomo of New York, who literally said, "We're not going to make America great again because America was never really that great." I mean, and even his own audience booed him. And yet, often Democrats show how they really feel. Senator Warren did the same thing. She believes that separating children from their parents at the border, which is a very complicated issue. If your parents rob a bank, what are you going to do with the kids? If the parents break the law, what are you going to do with the kids? If the parents come across the border and maybe they're not even legally or actually the children of the adults who claim they're the children, what do you do with the kids? It's a tough issue. Everybody instinctively knows that, and yet Elizabeth Warren, and I was at the border when she was there. I saw her giving a press conference a month or so ago. I was along the Rio Grande broadcasting the show from there. And, of course, she was, she was wringing her hands and very concerned about the separation of children. Well, as people have adequately put it, Molly Tibbetts was permanently separated from her family for eternity. And what happened there is our nation's shame. Two people that we know of shouldn't be dead today, Kate Steinle and Molly Tibbetts. And yet, because of our lax border laws, this is what can happen. And face it, that when he came down the escalator and said he was going to run for president, this was the whole foundation of the Trump presidency. This was the whole reason the guy said he was going to run for president. Again, Americans know it. Let's just see on November the 6th if they're going to continue to give him the mandate that he needs to achieve the conservative agenda that he has set out upon, bull in a China shop and all. It's a funny thing, Dan and Kristen, about these never-Trumpers. I was watching a Republican on Twitter the other day say, conservative supporters of Donald Trump have abandoned their conservative principles. I think that's just opposite. Never-Trumpers have abandoned their conservative principles because without Donald Trump, we wouldn't have the conservative achievements and accomplishments of the last year and a half. They know that. They know we wouldn't have the federal judges who are rock-solid conservatives. They know we wouldn't have tax cuts. They know we wouldn't have the capital of, the embassy moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. All these things, there's a whole list, pages of long of conservative accomplishments. What do never-Trumpers say would happen to that list if it weren't for Donald Trump? So that's the quandary that many Americans find themselves in. For some of us, it isn't that tough.
And coming up right after Labor Day, Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing, to your point. He's Mike Gallagher, host of The Mike Gallagher Show, weekdays right after ours, 9 a.m. on AM 560. Mike, thanks for joining us. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys. I'm going to go off glamping now.
There you go. And you join us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Kristen McQuarrie from the Tribune in for Amy J. this morning. We're talking to Mike Gallagher about all things Lanny Davis, Michael Cohen, Paul Manafort, impeachment related. Harry in Hawthorne Woods, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. Hold on. I got to turn you up a little bit here. I don't know what the deal is there. Yeah. I'm sorry. I wanted to ask the question, why doesn't Trump at this point fire Mueller and eliminate the political havoc that Mueller is creating? I mean, you could say that, it would create more of a political problem for him.
Yeah.
But I got to believe at this point, Mueller's not going to stop until he prosecutes somebody that's going to make something up about Trump that they could find a way to make it stick.
Yeah, thanks for the call here. I mean, I agree with you with respect to Mueller's not going to stop until he gets to something that he thinks is impeachable, or would demand articles of impeachment. I think that's right. But I think still at this stage, until you have Richard Burr, Senate Intel Chairman, and majority, if not unanimity, among Republicans in the on the Hill about Mueller, the political cost is way too high, particularly 75 days before a midterm election. So that's why I think he doesn't do it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning, Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune editorial board. And Kristen, does Fox and Friends, are they just permanently stationed on the White House lawn?
They are. And I've actually seen him tweet something at 4 or 5 in the morning where he can see them out on the lawn. And he'll tweet like, I think I'll stop by.
Yeah.
Puts on his suit.
Sure.
Walks out there, sits down for an interview, and that happened apparently 2 hours ago.
Location, location, location. That's the key.
That's
for the
key.
Media.
Yep.
Smart. He sat down with Fox and Friends this morning, asked a number of questions. Ainsley, is that who did the interview?
I don't care.
I always get Ainsley and Steve Ducey confused. Anyway, she asked, if it wasn't a crime, why did Michael Cohen plead guilty to something that wasn't a crime regarding the campaign contributions, obviously?
If you're saying the payments, if they're not illegal, then why would he use that information for a
because
plea deal?
Because he makes a better deal when he uses me, like everybody else. And one of the reasons I respect Paul Manafort so much is he went through that trial. You know, they make up stories. People make up stories. This whole thing about flipping, they call it. I know all about flipping. For 30, 40 years, I've been watching flippers. Everything's wonderful, and then they get 10 years in jail, and they flip on whoever the next highest mm-hmm. one is, or as high as you can go. Mm-hmm. It almost ought to be outlawed. It's not fair. Because if somebody's going to spend 5 years like Michael Cohen, or 10 years or 15 years in jail because of a taxicab industry, because he defrauded some bank, the last two were the tiny ones. You know, campaign violations are considered not a big deal, mm-hmm. frankly. But if somebody defrauded a bank and he's going to get 10 years in jail or 20 years in jail, but if you can say something bad about Donald Trump and you'll go down to 2 years or 3 years, which is the deal he made, in all fairness to him, most people are going to do that.
I don't know about outlawing plea bargaining. I don't know about that. But does the president have a point that, the Mueller investigative team, in this case, the Southern District prosecutor, same sort of ethos with respect to prosecutors, the point being that you're incentivized to embellish your story, even plead guilty to things that are not crimes, because it really doesn't make a difference in your sentencing. And what's the difference between pleading guilty to 6 felonies and 8, as long as you can help us get to that next rung on the ladder? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Yeah, I mean, so Michael Cohen is just, I mean, he is spiraling right now. He is under tremendous financial pressure. Well, you know, they started a GoFundMe page for him.
Sure.
Because he suffered this tragedy.
That's right.
Which is ridiculous. But if you just, he has been borrowing against borrowing as it related to this medallion issue. And you can just see that he is, as we talked about earlier, they squeezed him until the juice came out. And I got to say, I would be a little concerned if I were Donald Trump. He initially got into the Trump circle, Michael Cohen we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
Through the foundation, which is still, the Trump Foundation is still under investigation by the New York Attorney General. And we don't know what sort of information he might have there. And this is also Trump's personal lawyer since the early 2000s. So
Elijah Cummings wants him to appear before a House committee. There's Lanny Davis made an overture yesterday when he wasn't begging for money from the American people for himself. And Michael Cohen made an overture that that Michael Cohen has things to say about pre-knowledge of hacking and collusion that Mueller might be interested in hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So the real estate business, Trump's financial dealings and disclosures over the years. You know, when you have somebody that is in your inner circle like that, who ostensibly betrays you, and that's what Trump is saying when he said talks about the flippers.
Him, right.
Yeah, and not to mention what we already know to be true. You know, there's potentially a lot of exposure. And remember, if Mueller can't get you on conspiring with the Russians to alter the outcome of the 2016 election or somehow impact it, no evidence there, then he could get you on a series of financial crimes enough so that the politicians on the Hill, worried about their own careers, would feel compelled to move to impeachment. Remember, I think about this in the with respect to Blagojevich's impeachment before his conviction here. The big thing was the sale of the Senate seat. Everybody understood it. He understood what he was doing, and it was slimy, right? But there were also sort of lesser included charges in his impeachment.
You mean it before the state Senate?
Yes, illegally expanding Medicaid,
yes,
for example. But that's not sexy. That's not interesting. You're not going to commit. You're not going to get popular support to remove him over that. You can't for the sale of Senate seat. And it seems to me if you can't get him on Russian collusion, which is the headline here, then Mueller and his team are looking for, and Cohen may be able to provide something salacious enough, easily understood, that would compel popular opinion against Trump. That's what they're looking for. And, you know, Michael Cohen and maybe Paul Manafort may be able to facilitate that.
Yeah. I mean, so and I don't quite understand why the Cohen case was farmed out to the DA in New York. So
because it was outside of Mueller's scope on Russian collusion. There's nothing Russian collusion related to it.
But Manafort, there was nothing on Russian collusion, and that stayed within the Mueller circle.
Well, it's actually when you're talking about violations of registration requirements for foreign agents, Manafort's work with Yanukovych, the pro-Russian former dictator of Ukraine. So there was enough nexus there, I think, on Manafort.
So you think there's still, just because the New York DA's office is handling the case with Cohen, there's still cooperation, overlap, communication with the Mueller probe?
Well, or, I mean, that's what Landy Davis said yesterday. Landy Davis talked about this evidence that Cohen allegedly has that he wants to share with Mueller or May.
Lanny, last night you said that your client Michael Cohen has evidence about a conspiracy to collude and corrupt the democracy system in the 2016 election, including computer crime hacking. When will your counsel speak with the special counsel Robert Mueller about this?
So I was a little bit careful in the way I phrased that. I said that he had matters that would be of interest to the special counsel relating to pre-knowledge of computer hacking by Donald Trump, which, if true, would constitute knowledge of a crime committed by a foreign government in hacking our computers, which was part of the indictment of 12 Russians that the special counsel has already published. So my observation is that he can speak to that, and beyond that, I can't go. It will have to.
You're saying
play
Michael
out
Cohen
with the special
knows?
Counsel.
And then he slithered off screen. Did Landy Davis? That was on CBS Morning News yesterday. It's such an interesting. Landy Davis is, I guess, a PR flack, quasi legal representative of Michael Cohen. He's suggesting that his client has evidence that would be of interest, evidence of collusion, pre-knowledge of hacking that would be of interest to Mueller, right? And then he says, if true, this is what it would constitute. So is it true or not true?
Well,
if you have evidence, then are we to believe the evidence you suggest your client has or not? It's remarkable to listen to these guys.
Right. He also says in a couple of those areas, like, my observation is, which, you know, well, that's just Lanny Davis's observation.
And he won't go into any more detail than he has. I mean, it's just more kind of like Trump should be indicted. If he wasn't the president, he'd be jailed. And Michael Cohen is a paragon of integrity, and his family has had a tragedy befall them. And I mean,
even though his net worth is what, somewhere in the woods of $20 million to $100 million, Michael Cohen. But he needs a GoFundMe page because he's had this horrible tragedy occur.
Speaking of Clinton operatives, Mark Penn is a former one. He writes in The Hill about this topic. And I got to say, I mean, you know, Dershowitz and Mark Penn don't always agree with them, but at least these guys seem to be setting forth a standard of evidence that must be cleared, and also standards with respect to issues that concern them, regardless of partisan affiliation. Mark Penn writing about the whole underlying question of whether or not the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels was criminal, violation of campaign finance laws. He makes a couple of points. First, given the payment was in October, it would never have been reported before the election campaign. And so for all intents and purposes, was immaterial as it relates to any effect on the campaign. Interesting point. What is clear in the plea deal is that in exchange for overall leniency on his massive tax evasion, Cohen is pleading guilty to these other charges as an attempt to give prosecutors what they want, which is a Trump connection. And just again, going back to the issue of the illegality or lack thereof with respect to the campaign finance issue and the Stormy Daniels payment. It was made and reimbursed by Trump. It's again a question of whether that was made for personal reasons, especially since they've been trying since 2011 to obtain agreement.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's a good point. Five years before the election. Just because it would be helpful to the campaign does not convert it to a campaign expenditure, writes Penn, who again was a top operative for Hillary Clinton when she ran for president in 08. Think of a candidate with bad teeth who had dental work done to look better for the campaign. His campaign still could not pay for it because it's a personal expenditure. And he goes on to point out, now contrast this with the treatment of the millions of dollars paid to a Democrat law firm, which paid out money to Fusion GPS and British spy Christopher Steele without listing them on any campaign expenditure form, despite clear laws and regulations that the ultimate beneficiaries of the funds must be listed. This rule is even tightened recently, writes Penn. There's no question hiring spies to do oppo in Russia is a campaign expenditure, yet no prosecutorial raids have been sprung on the law firm Fusion GPS or Steele. The reason? It doesn't get Trump.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's a really good point, and I think it's a difficult one for Democrats to respond to with respect to the campaign finance violations on the other side. By the way, Lanny Davis on the Steele dossier that also had Michael Cohen in Prague.
Mm-hmm.
In meetings
untrue.
With Russian, you know, actors, untrue. Mm-hmm. So Lanny Davis is also, calling the dossier a fraud while he's, you know, defending a convicted fraudster like Cohen.
I'm still having a hard time even accepting that should have been reported, that the payments should have been reported as an in-kind contribution on his campaign. It wasn't a campaign expense. He can make the argument that John Edwards made, that he was protecting his family, that he wanted to avoid embarrassment. They have a timeline where they were trying to push her years ago to be quiet about it, and I bet there's others out there. So you can't say that the FEC rule is, if it was campaign related and it would not have otherwise been spent but for the campaign,
right,
then it's considered campaign related. I think you can make a case that it wasn't. And I know federal prosecutors say it was. And you have Michael Cohen pleading guilty to it. But it doesn't make sense to me. It's not a campaign expense.
I think you can make the case both ways. I really can. I think we don't know because we don't know exactly what Trump's role was and where he incurred in this whole process of orchestrating this payment. So I think you're right. I think a credible case can be made, as you describe. I think potentially a credible case could be made that it was a campaign expense. But the points that Mark Penn raises are really salient ones. Deborah in Arlington Heights, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I'm really surprised people cannot see through this tactic. As long as the Democrats put the focus on Trump and everything surrounding Trump, it's a diversionary tactic to take the focus off anything that would be wrong there. And I cannot believe that supposedly intelligent people cannot see through that.
All right. Thanks for the call, Deborah. Ed in Oak Brook.
You know, I absolutely agree with your previous caller. It doesn't matter. You guys are quoting all of these laws and all of that good stuff, and it's all good stuff. But you know what? It doesn't matter. This is all red meat for the hating Trump crowd. But the fact of the matter is, Trump associated himself with a guy like this Cohen guy. I'm asking you, Dan, would you associate yourself with a creep like that, a guy who tapes your conversations even though you don't know it at the time? But this guy was dirty, and he just didn't turn dirty during the election. So Trump is guilty of associating with creeps like Cohen. And have a nice day.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thanks, Ed.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning, Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune editorial board, and we had Trump tweeting yesterday into the early morning hours about Michael Cohen, including not giving him a very good Angie's List review. If anyone is looking for a good lawyer, I would strongly suggest that you don't retain the services of Michael Cohen. Yeah, that's not surprising.
I think he's going to have he's going to be quite busy with other things for a while. I don't think he's going to be providing very many legal services.
Well, he should use his law license while he still has it. You know, so I chop chop, and Lanny Davis was on the Megyn Kelly show basically saying he'll fix things for food.
Right. I mean,
so
I already made my donation this morning.
Yeah,
to his GoFundMe page.
I'm sure after that.
Compelling case. Yes. It's destitute. Yes.
Open your hearts, won't you? Boy, Lanny Davis should be doing telethons, really. Trump was on Fox and Friends this morning talking about Michael Cohen's guilty plea and taking the position that obviously his legal representation is taken, but so has Alan Dershowitz and Mark Levin and others. That there is no crime here with respect to the hush money payment. Interesting post, one of our listeners posted on my Facebook page about, remember the slush fund that was discovered that Congress had to pay out using taxpayer dollars accusations of sexual harassment and other misconduct by members of Congress?
Oh, yes.
I mean, that's taxpayer dollars, so I guess it's okay, private dollars. Interesting point, the hypocrisy, not really so much a commentary on campaign finance law and the underlying argument here, but it is a great point on the hypocrisy. Trump was also asked about pardons. Of course, Michael Cohen has too much integrity to accept a pardon. None is being offered or forthcoming, I suspect. But on Manafort, Trump was a little bit more cagey.
Are you considering pardoning Paul Manafort?
I have great respect for what he's done in terms of what he's gone through. You know, he worked for Ronald Reagan for years. He worked for Bob Dole. He worked, I guess his firm worked for McCain. He worked for many, many people, many, many years. And I would say what he did, some of the charges they threw against him, every consultant, every lobbyist in Washington probably does. I didn't know Manafort well. He wasn't with the campaign long. They got him on things totally unrelated to the campaign. And by the way, they got Cohen on totally unrelated to the campaign. I'm not involved. I wasn't charged with anything. You know, people don't like to say that, but I wasn't charged. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the corruption on the other side, and they refuse to look at anything. When you don't look at Strzok, where he said, basically, we're going to take out the president, the insurance policy and everything else. You look at Lisa Page, the two lovers back and forth with these horrible texts. You look at the kind of talk going on about, it's really subversion. And our Justice Department doesn't do anything about it. People would say, oh, but you appointed Jeff Sessions. I said, I did. But I really feel, as long as this is going out, I don't have to do this, but I will stay uninvolved, and maybe that's the best thing to do.
Is that a no regarding the pardoning of Manafort? I didn't really get an answer there. The other thing is, you know, I mean, again, wordsmithing isn't Trump's forte. But for the president of the United States to be saying, I wasn't charged with anything, that's not a headline that you want. It's almost stripes worthy. Never convicted. For more on this topic, including AG Sessions, which Trump spoke about some more in that interview, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Good morning.
Good morning. So why don't we start with the underlying debate about whether or not the hush money does constitute a campaign contribution subject to campaign finance laws. You've, of course, I'm sure, been exposed to the arguments being made by not just the president, but Dershowitz and Levin. What say you to that topic?
Well, you know, I think that the confusion here, and it really is confusion, I've been trying to harp, Dan, on the argument that even assuming that it is a campaign violation, it's a very tough proof against Trump. It's not one that I would, as a prosecutor, approve based on the facts that we have now. But, you know, to confront the underlying question, is it or isn't it, I think the problem we have now is that, and I've spent a couple of hours looking into this between last night and this morning, it seems to me that the Justice Department and the Federal Election Commission are operating on two different sets of assumptions. And the reason that we have such debate is the Justice Department has taken the position in the past that it is a crime, and the FEC, particularly Mark's interview, who was it, with Bradley who had the election finance background? I can't remember exactly it was. But right, so Mark, they take the position that it's a much more narrow, that the idea of in-kind contributions is much more narrow, almost to the point where it's like different in kind from what the Justice Department is saying. And I think that the other thing in the mix that muddies the waters is, even though the Justice Department has taken the position that this is a crime, the place where they famously did that was in the John Edwards prosecution.
Right, and was hung. Yeah, right, hung jury. Right.
Yeah, so they lost, and then I think that scared them off. But to the extent people are saying, you know, they lost, therefore they were wrong, they're leaving out the inconvenience that they lost. But first of all, as you point out, it was a hung jury. And secondly, that means that the judge let the case go to the jury. A judge can't let a case go to the jury unless the judge decides that there's enough evidence for a rational jury to find the crime. Whether they do or not is a separate thing. So I think it's really one of these situations where you have a statute and a set of regulations that can be interpreted more than one way, and you have the federal agency that is, you would think, the most authoritative in interpreting it, saying no, and that would be the Federal Election Commission. And then you have the agency that's in charge with deciding what can be prosecuted saying yes. And as a result, I'm not sure we're going to resolve that. And I'm more comfortable simply making the argument that given the high intent, the high intent standard here, and the facts that Trump wouldn't have had the campaign finance laws in the front of his mind, since he as the candidate isn't really, he has to report, but he can spend whatever he wants to spend.
Right.
He had other reasons for wanting to keep this information suppressed besides the election, even though I think the election was clearly one of the reasons. And he's not a lawyer. So you deal with all of that, and then you remain mindful of the fact that they have to prove willfulness, which almost defies the old legal adage that ignorance of the law is no excuse. When a statute adopts a willfulness standard, you really have to prove that somebody was aware specifically that his conduct was in violation of the law. I don't see how Trump would ever be charged with this.
And when you say the Justice Department has said it was a crime, we're still just talking about the lack of reporting as an in-kind, right?
And the excessive.
And the excessive amount,
limits,
but
right.
not that the hush money itself, the payment was illegal, but just the lack of reporting as an in-kind and the amount.
Yeah, Kristen, I noticed that one of the things the left is much better at us than us is in framing the narrative, I guess because they have the media following them in kind. So I think Lanny Davis really tried to frame the way that we should understand this. And everybody has been sort of echoing that since then. So he comes out and says that this was what made this illegal was that it was a payment to influence the election. And what it leads people to believe is that the payment itself, that is the entering into a hush money arrangement, is illegal. And, you know, they do this. A lot of these good government types do this sort of thing all the time. They are offended by the underlying conduct, but the sad fact for them is that the underlying conduct is not illegal. So they try to find some, you know, regulation that may technically apply to it and say they violated the regulation, but what they're really trying to do is criminalize the underlying conduct that they don't like, right? So here, the underlying conduct is this hush money payment to cover up these sexual liaisons, and try as they might, that simply isn't illegal. Non-disclosure arrangements are
entered into all the time, sometimes for savory reasons, sometimes for good business reasons, sometimes for probably other reasons. But the fact is they're not illegal.
Right.
And for those who suggest that, you know, that's what's going on here, what they tried to do was cover up a tawdry misconduct that Trump was involved in like 12 years ago. They're just wrong. It's not a crime.
You're a former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, so you're more than qualified to answer this hypothetical. If you were Rod Rosenstein, what would you be doing differently, if anything, at this point in terms of overseeing the Mueller investigation?
It's a hard question, Dan, because we don't know exactly what he is doing. And for all the noise out there about Mueller, and there's a lot of it, the things I keep coming back to that we can observe from the outside is that Mueller has never brought a case, even though he has brought cases against Russians involved in the hacking and in the troll farms and all that stuff. He has never in all this time brought a single case that remotely suggested that Trump was involved in collusion with Russia. And I think it's more important what he does than what people say about what he does.
And why?
And it has seemed to me for a long time that he's focused on, with respect to Trump, he's focused on obstruction, not collusion.
What about just?
And I don't think. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, what about just the financial crimes? To me, that seems to be like we might see a pivot here that we're not really going to focus on Russia collusion. But if Trump has some dirty laundry regarding his own taxes, regarding his own loans, which this is not someone who is crossed T's and dotted I's, and this is something that Cohen might have evidence on or might be able to lead them on. Do you see this kind of pivoting into more of a financial problem for Trump if he did cut corners when it comes to his own finances and taxes?
But that's outside Mueller's scope.
But he's already
really
outside
don't.
The
what
scope.
Kristen, in answer to that question, what I keep coming back to on Mueller is this. Mueller had Cohn first, and he decided he was not useful to Cohn's investigation and transferred the case to the Southern District of New York. I don't think they're going after Trump's businesses, and I would be surprised, other than like penny ante stuff, I would be surprised if Cohn knew all that much. Remember, Trump used Cohn for the things he used him for, and, you know, this kind of stuff with Stormy Daniels and Ms. McDougal, some savory stuff. But it doesn't look to me either like Cohn is much of a lawyer or that he would have been of much use to the Trump organization. And, until I see something that connects him to something that's actually big and important, I'm going to assume that what we know now about Cohn is what we're going to know. And he's such an unreliable source of information. I mean, his statements have been contradictory and all over the lot. Notice that when he pled guilty, he didn't plead to a cooperation agreement. He pled to a straight-up guilty plea, which suggests to me that between Mueller giving his case to the Southern District and the Southern District not signing him up as a cooperator, I don't think they see him as much of a witness.
Cohen is Fredo. He's Fredo in this story.
Well, but he initially came into the Trump circle, though, also through the foundation. So, and that is still the New York IRS version, the state version, is now stepping up its case, and the attorney general is still looking at that. I don't know. Maybe it's nothing, but I would be nervous if I were Trump.
Well,
yeah, look, anytime they have somebody in their control, and you're talking about prosecutors, and some of them look like they're hell-bent on making a case, especially New York is so political. I mean, I know Schneiderman is out of there, but it's one of the most politicized attorney general's offices in the country. So naturally, you'd have to be concerned. But you also have to remember that Trump swam like a shark in those waters for a very, very long time, and he still managed to get himself elected president. So
that's true.
Wanted to get your take on Michael Flynn's sentencing being pushed off again now till September. Is that a decision that was prompted by the Manafort convictions, or what do you think is going on there?
I don't think so, Dan. I think this is standard fare. As I said a couple of minutes ago, I really think for Mueller, the Trump case is now an obstruction case, not a collusion case. And if there is an obstruction, I want to underscore here, I'm not saying there is an obstruction case. I'm saying that's what Mueller is focused on, whether there is or there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
If there is one, Flynn is a witness, right? So the standard practice is you don't, when you have cooperators, you don't get them sentenced until their cooperation is finished, which includes any testimony. So if Mueller agreed to have Flynn sentenced at this point, that would be tantamount to saying his investigation is completed. And I don't think he's ready to say that. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, a report is imminent saying that Trump obstructed justice. But what it means is Mueller is not ready to wrap up. And if I were the prosecutor, I would not allow the cooperators on the thing I was investigating to be sentenced until I was satisfied that I was ready to write my report and wrap up.
He is Andy McCarthy, always helping us wade through the noise with respect to these sundry legal issues. Former Chief Assistant U.S. Attorney in Manhattan, contributing at National Review, must read at nationalreview.com on all things legal ease related. Andy, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too. Join us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Chris McCreary from the Tribune in for Amy this morning. And, boy, this is important news from Golf Digest. How does alcohol affect your golf game? I mean, it stops the crying. I'll tell you that. I'm just speaking for myself. But here's the experiment that was conducted. Three golfers, a low, mid, and high handicapper, hit six drives, six approach shots, and six putts, tracking the results of each performance. So they started doing the exercise sober, and then they saw how alcohol consumption affected their driving, their approach shots, and their putts as they consumed two drinks, then four drinks, then eight drinks. The conclusion? In distance, second shot proximity, and putting, the performance was relatively steady.
Hmm.
Driving accuracy, however, went way south following four drinks. So let that be a lesson to you purveyors of swing oil, swing lube, as we call it in the business.
My goodness.
No, that's what alcohol is.
Just beer? Or what do you drink on the golf course? And do you drink while you play? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Do you carry it around, or do people deliver it to you? How does that work?
Well, I mean, I'm not out at some public track with golf cart girls. No, of course. You go to the halfway house or the clubhouse like a dignified gentleman, and you get your John Daly, your martini,
mm-hmm.
your craft beer. But here's the thing. Four drinks and your driving accuracy, which already is a problem for me, goes way south. So... if you're not so worried about driving the ball or score, which I guess I shouldn't be anymore at my advancing age and increasing handicap, then, I mean, just drink
and enjoy yourself.
Love beer.
Yeah.
What's a John Daly? Did you say John Daly?
A John Daly. It's an Arnold Palmer with vodka.
I don't know what an Arnold Palmer is.
Oh, my goodness.
What? Mike, Scott,
I'm sorry. I'm
lemonade,
just
iced tea?
Lemonade, iced tea.
Oh, that's a non-alcoholic beer drink.
Right, and then the John.
Yes. You add the alcohol to
yes.
it.
But per John Daly, I don't believe this study. I mean, John Daly's driving actually has nothing to do with the smoking and drinking, number one.
It doesn't.
He gambles, he drinks, he smokes.
He still hits at 300.
Two majors.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Also, he's 400 pounds. He's like a physical impossibility. So that's what I want to be. That's what I'm aspiring to be, and I think it'll improve my golf game. 400-pound, alcoholic, smoking, a gambling addict. That's, to me, the pathway to playing good golf.
And you're almost there in every category. So
I am.
Keep working at it.
Well, that's right, because
I'm
not a quitter.
That's right.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
It's time for Dan Prof's Parenting Tips. Whoa! Dan Prof's Parenting Tips. Whoa! Tell your kids to shut up and listen to him.
You're a child. Good morning, Dan. And for Amy this morning, Kristen McQuarrie, she also has real children like Amy does. I have fictional children. I'm not sure if I'm done having fictional children. I may still grow my family.
How old are your children?
They're 8 and 11. It's a fun age.
Yeah?
I started them out in 8 and 11 because I, you know, want them to be interesting to me.
Right. You skipped through all of the dirty diapers and the having to read, you know, little Goodnight Moon. You skipped through all that.
I don't know.
You just got right to the fun ages.
I got to start developing them. I'm kind of pressed for time. Yeah. So I got to start turning them into intellectual assassins and future professional athletes right away.
Yeah.
I can't wait 6-7 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So kind of telescoping all the parenting that you and Amy and others have done, because I'm an innovator. Here's the thing. Jordan Peterson was on Fox News show this week. He's become quite popular. His 12 Rules for Life is a bestseller. Here's his recommendation for parents. One of his rules for parents with respect to raising children. And we'll see if you agree, and then we'll apply it to a case study, because this is a seminar in Wilmette.
It's in honor of our guest for the hour, Dr. Jordan Peterson. Now, if you're one of the few people who still hasn't heard of Dr. Peterson, his meteoric rise to fame has brought him to the forefront of the world of psychology, with his message influencing millions of people around the world. In fact, Dr. Peterson has been described as the most influential public intellectual in the Western world right now.
I don't know why
his
we
book,
have to listen to
12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos, has become the number one bestseller on Amazon. For the next hour, Dr. Peterson will share his insights and answer questions from the audience. So let's get right to it. Dr.
Finally.
Peterson, thank you so much for joining us all here. We're really excited to see you. This may be quite an annoying question, since you've written a book that talks about 12 rules for life. But just for those in our audience
notes,
who may not
Dan.
Have heard your lectures or watched you on YouTube or
read why
the
why
book,
do I is there put
a way
time
you
codes
can capture
clips?
The essence
I
of your argument?
Know.
Is there perhaps one rule above all others, or some core argument that you could use to explain?
Well, there's probably
going on.
Two, I would say.
Okay.
One of the rules is do what is meaningful, not what is expedient. And that's sort of twinned with tell the truth, or at least don't lie.
Right.
And I'd like to concentrate mostly on the rule that describes the necessity of meaning. And I've spent a lot of time talking to my public audiences about this, as well as outlining it in the book. The theme of the book is, in some sense, somewhat pessimistic, because it outlines the reality that we're all ensconced in, let's say, and describes it as one that certainly has an element of tragedy. You know, life is difficult for people, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of suffering in life, and it's often contaminated by malevolence, because we can take a bad situation for us and our families and our communities and certainly do everything we can to make it worse.
Yeah, so that's a good instruction for kids, although that's not the rule I was getting to. The rule I was getting to, and Jordan Peterson ultimately got to, was don't let your children do anything that would make you dislike them. Don't let your children do anything that would make you dislike them.
How? Don't let them? I mean, they're going to just do stuff. You can't control everything they do.
Well, I don't know what the disciplinary regime is in your household. But yeah, his point is to say, sort of establish the boundaries that and the structure that children innately desire, such that they don't. They're less likely to color outside the lines to make you dislike them. The point is to say...
Yeah, please, get to the point.
Well, that's one of the points of structure. I mean, this is not novel. This is not some kind of great insight, but one of the points of structure. The other thing is, if they're doing something that makes you dislike them and you don't correct it, then they're going to grow up to be to do things that would make other people dislike them too. You're a good barometer for bad behavior, and that should be corrected when it's expressed, such that your children are liked, because being liked, particularly in the development ages, is the pathway to socialization, which turns out to be critically important to intellectual development and sort of being a civilized adult.
I only agree with half of that.
What's the which half?
I think,
which half you disagree with?
I think that you can, when you started to venture into color outside the lines, I think you can destroy some of your own kids' creativity and confidence and willingness to be different by constantly making them worry about being liked and you know, following every norm and not questioning things and, you know, worrying all the time about what people think of them. I understand it as it relates to basic socialization and kindness. And I mean, my kids rolled their eyes at me yesterday morning because there's a new kid at school and I've been lecturing them about make sure you make this child feel welcome. Think of how you would feel if you were in that situation.
Did you ever show them the movie One Crazy Summer?
No.
John Cusack movie?
No.
Demi Moore?
No.
Next time they roll their eyes, first of all, let them watch that movie. And then the next time they roll their eyes or make a face at you, you slap them on the back. Because in that movie, One Crazy Summer, it proves up that if you slap somebody on the back when they roll your eyes or they're making a face, it freezes like that.
Oh, okay. I will do that.
This is the way to interdict bad behavior, which is what Jordan Peterson's talking about. Nobody likes an eye roller except me. Nobody likes somebody who makes faces except me.
They know that if they cross their eyes too long, they get stuck. We've warned them about that. They know if they eat too much sugar, you get worms. They know if you eat the crust on your bread, it makes your hair grow longer. I mean, I could go on, but these are a lot of...
Future scientists.
Let me help you out with some parenting tips.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. Touché.
Yes.
I like to also refer to the professionals in the space. My colleagues, as it were, pediatricians. The American Academy of Pediatrics released an advisory this week. Imagine a drug that could enhance a child's creativity, you were speaking to, critical thinking and resilience. Imagine that this drug were simple to make, safe to take, and could be had for free. You know what the Wonder Drug is?
Read it again, the little thingy. What
no.
is it?
I won't.
Had for free. I'm trying to go backwards.
Imagine a drug that could enhance a child's creativity, critical thinking, and resilience. What is it?
A drug?
Mm-hmm.
A book?
Play. Some parents you are.
Play
is not frivolous, the Academy's report, the American Academy of Pediatrics report declares. It nurtures children's ingenuity, cooperation, and problem-solving skills, all of which are critical for the 21st century workforce. Okay, well, it's not just about making them, you know, worker bees, drones. But in the pediatrician's view, every life skill that's valued in adults can be built up with play. It's particularly important before babies turn 2 years old. Play is essential to healthy development, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics. And that's consistent with a study that comes to us out of Illinois State, advising against too much helicopter parenting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree with that. It's very tempting to be a helicopter parent because you hear one bad story and you worry that someone's going to drive by and snatch your kid and drive off. And so there's a temptation to helicopter parent. I read something recently about parents are now joining their children at school at lunch. Can you imagine if your mother came and sat with you in the cafeteria at lunch? Oh, it's gotten so ridiculous.
Every kid, I mean, the beating you would take.
Oh, I know. My mom used to write on my napkin, you know, like, have a good day or I love you or something. And I would get teased just about that. I mean, I can't imagine if she showed up.
It's absurd. And this is sort of what the Illinois State academics are getting at. Some of, you know, working with your children on their homework or a project for them, checking on them when they're out with their friends, all that. Some of that's good parenting, but taking away all agency, taking away all independence is where you start to get developmental problems in children, which can lead to the rise of anxiety and depression later in life. Now, the flip side of that is if you're not a helicopter parent, then your kids are taken away from you by the state, which almost happened in Wilmette. For Corey Wyden, Wilmette had DCFS called on her for allowing her 8-year-old girl to walk the family dog around the block in plain sight of mom.
In Wilmette.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, police were called. A neighbor was concerned. And I think because police are mandated reporters and because the call was probably child neglect, they had to report it to DCFS. DCFS had to open a case on this woman, visit her, interview her. I mean, that is just beyond ridiculous.
See something, employ common sense before you say something. How about that? And also, bottom line, prop parenting tip, if I could just drill it down to one of prof's rules, if I may borrow from the great Jordan Peterson, leave your kids alone.
How's it going with your 8 and 11-year-old?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Mike in New Lenox, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think I think Jordan, Dr. Peterson's book is just a secular knockoff of Proverbs.
Yeah, that's right.
It says train your child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. I got two boys that are close in age, and I wanted them to be loyal to each other. And when I would see them sort of like abandon one to go hang out with friends at the expense of the other, we came down hard on that. I didn't want them to be loyal to friends. I wanted them to be loyal to each other first. And you know, and that's we started to see that come to fruition in their lives. So, you know, this is just stuff that's been out there for centuries and millennia.
Sure.
If we just would actually watch it.
Well, thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, I agree with that. But it's fallen out of favor in certain circles. So sort of it's worth kind of revisiting ancient wisdom, as it were. So make sure they see One Crazy Summer so they don't grow up to be smart asses.
What is it rated? What is that rated?
It's PG.
Okay.
It's perfectly saccharine.
All right.
I mean, it's John Cusack.
That's true.
How edgy could it be?
But sometimes I've seen movies in the 80s now that I go back and watch, and I can't believe they were PG. Because we've become so PC. See what I did there?
Oh, very nice. The other movie? Just watch one of the opening scenes from American Sniper when Dad has the talk, the wolf, sheep, sheepdog talk with the sons, right? And it's like, this family, the men are going to be sheepdogs. You're not a wolf. You don't prey on people. You're not sheep. You don't just follow people blindly. You're a sheepdog. You protect the less able to protect themselves from predators.
Mm. I read the book.
And that's, of
so
course, what
Chris
Kyle did.
Right. I read the book. I didn't watch the movie. More intellectual.
Well, of course.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, you're one of those people who every time somebody refers to a movie like that, you say, yeah, I thought the book was better than the movie.
I do that.
Yeah.
I do.
Mm-hmm. So smart.
I mean, I've read almost every movie that derived from a book. I read the book first. And then why bother with the movie? Why cheapen my experience?
I think your kids will turn out to rival mine intellectually. Perry and Niles, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, you do have caller ID. if Wilmette is so damn dangerous, why don't they fix Wilmette instead of hassling this family? Come on.
Okay, thanks for the call, Perry and Niles.
Yeah, I mean, there were other cases that the Tribune story touched on where one woman had the police called on her because she left a child in a car momentarily while she walked her other child up to deposit some coins in a Salvation Army bucket. And just in the amount of time that she was gone, they called the police on her. So
one other thing, ancient wisdom for a previous caller from New Lenox here. Parent's not your friend, parent. And don't try to be cool. And pay attention to what's going on in the public policy area that negatively impacts how your child sees the world. For example, you know, we're hell-bent to legalize drugs, legalize recreational
marijuana
mm-hmm. here. New study out that suggests that marijuana, smoking, literally turns you into a dope. Smoking cannabis ages the brain by an average of 2.8 years.
I didn't think it was 2.8 years annually?
No.
Or just total?
This is compared to 4 years in schizophrenia patients, according to the largest study of its kind. The aging is defined as reduced blood flow through the organ. Excessive alcohol also ages the brain 6/10 of a year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
All right.
Thank you, Dan, for all the parenting advice. I really appreciate it. I look forward to meeting your children sometime and being able to experience all of the wisdom that you've passed along to them. Just, you know.
See?
Maybe we could go to a water park together or something.
Was that so hard to say, to provide that kind of deference?
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.